The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Today is Shushan Purim. That's the day after Purim. In Shushan, they had war against their enemies for 2 days, both on the 13th and the 14th of Adar. And they celebrated Purim on the 15th of Adar. While in the rest of the empire, they had war on the 13th and celebrated Purim on the 14th. A decree was made that all of the cities like Shushan that were walled in from the time of Yeshua, which includes Yerushalayim, would celebrate Purim on the 15th of Adar, while the rest of the world would celebrate Purim on the 14th. Since it's Shushan Purim and everybody is still in the spirit of Purim, so I'm going to devote the shiur this evening to a few notes on Purim, on the Megillas Esther. And also, I think that everyone, at least most people, are very tired from the Simchas Purim, so we'll make it a rather light shiur and not too long. The Gemara brings in Masechet Yuma and Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis Toner Rabbonin, very a well known Gemara. Toner Rabbonin Oni V'Oshe V'Rosho. A poor man, a wealthy man, and a wicked man, an evil man, Boin Ledin, they will come to the Bezdin Shulmalo, to the heavenly court. The Oni Aimrim Lemibne Malaya Sakta Betorah. The prosecutor will say to the poor man that in this world, why didn't you not occupy yourself with the study of Torah? If you will say, because I was a very poor man in this world and I was busy making a living, I had to work very hard, so they will say to him, it was impossible for you to be a greater oni, a greater poor man than Hillel. It was said on Hillel the elder, Shebechol Yem V'Yem Hayaeso Mistake B'Tarpik. Every day he would go to work and he would make a tarpik. A tarpik was a small amount of money. Chetzav Ayinesin L'Sheme Beis HaMedrash V'Chetzav L'Panososoy L'Panosos L'Panosos Anshe Beisoy. Half of it he would give to the guard at the Beis HaMedrash. They wouldn't let anybody in the Beis HaMedrash unless he paid his share of the upkeep of the Beis HaMedrash. So half of that he would give every day to the guard in order to allow him to come into the Beis HaMedrash to study. And the other half he would use to sustain he and his household. One day he went out to work and things were tough and he didn't make any money that day. He came to the Beis HaMedrash to learn, and the guard said, where is the money? And he says, I have no money. So he wouldn't let him in. All of a nitle Yoshev al pi aruba. So he went up to the roof, went up to the roof, and he sat by the skylight. There was a window on the roof, and there he sat to hear the shiur. At that time there were two great sages by the name of Shemaya v'Avtalion. They're mentioned in Pirkei Oves. And in order to hear the words of the living God from Shemaya v'Avtalion, Omru, Ose Hayem Erev Shabbos Hoyo. As it happened, that day was Erev Shabbos. U'tekufis Tevis Hoyeso. And it came out during the month of Tevis. Tevis is in, falls in the January February season, so it's very very cold in the northern hemisphere. V'yorad olav sheleg min hashamayim, and it snowed, and it kept snowing, and he was engrossed in listening to the shir. He didn't realize that he was slowly being covered with snow, and he was slowly freezing. And what happened is he became covered with snow and frozen. He fell asleep. Kishu'ola amud ha-shachar, the next day, Shabbos, when came dawn, Omar le Shemaya le-Avtalion, Shemaya went in, and Avtalion went into the Beis HaMedrash to study. Shemaya said to Avtalion, Avtalion ochi. He says, Avtalion, my brother, b'chol yom habayis meir. Every morning when we come in, it's light in here. V'hayim eifel, and today it's dark. Shem yom ha'unen hu. Maybe it's overcast. He tzitzu einehen, they looked up at the skylight, v'ro the mus od baruba. And they saw the form of a man on the skylight. Olu motza olav reim shlesh amei shelek. They went up, and they found on him 3 cubits, that's arm lengths of snow he was covered in. Parku, they dug him out, birchitzuhu, they put him in a hot bathtub, sihuhu, they rubbed him down good with oil, veishivuhu kenegra madura, and they put him next to the fire. And they revived him. Omru, rei zelechal alolovis ha-shabbos. When they saw, they recognized this was the one that the young man that used to come in every day to learn, and he was went through such hardship. They said, this man is surely befitting to desecrate the Shabbos for. So this was Hillel. Every day he went out to work, he made a small amount of money. Half he would give to the guard of the Beis HaMedrash to allow him to come in. The other half he would use to sustain his household. So therefore, when an oni, a poor man, will come to the Beis HaMedrash Shilmalo, to the Bezdin Shilmalo, if he says, I was too poor to occupy myself with Torah in this world, they will show him Hillel. Hillel will become the precedent for that. If he says that the reason why I did not study Torah in this world, because I was too wealthy, I had a lot of property, I had a lot of money which needed attention, needed management. They'll say to him, you couldn't have been wealthier than Reb Lozer. Omru olav al Reb Lozer ben Charshum. They said, an Reb Lozer ben Charshum. This is a Gemara we're quoting from Gemara Masechet Yuma Daf Lamed Hey Amud Beis. Shehiniach le oviv, that his father left him elef ayores bayabosho, 1,000 cities on the dry land, ukenegdon elef sfinas bayam, and 1,000 ships at sea. This was the estate that he inherited. Now he wasn't interested in money. He wanted to study Torah. V'chol yem v'yem neitel noad shel kemach al ksefei v'mahalech mi'ir l'ir u'medina l'medina l'ilmei Torah. Every day he would go and he would take a container of flour with him, some food, and he would go where people wouldn't know him, because otherwise he would be bothered too much. He was a very important man. And he would go into isolation to places where nobody would recognize him, so he could study Torah. Pamachas mitzo'u avodov. One day he was in a city, and there was a tax on the inhabitants of the city. That there were two types of taxes. One tax is where they had to give money. Another tax where physically they would have to go help. For example, if water, irrigation, a dam had to be built, everybody had to contribute physically towards it, where they would go and lend a hand. So there was such a tax, and the soldiers of the city, which actually was his city, and the soldiers were working for him, but they didn't know who he was, they see him walking around, and they said, "You are supposed to be working today. This is a day when everybody was supposed to go out and help dig." So they said, he said, "No, please leave me go. I want to go study Torah." They said, "No, by the life of Reb Lezer ben Chasam, who owns the city, we cannot leave you go." And he wasn't able to free himself from these people until he gave them a sum of money to free himself from the tax. And if anybody who ever saw him, he was studying Torah the whole day and the whole night, all of the time. So if a person will say that he's too wealthy, and this is why he had no time to study, they'll show him Reb Lezer ben Chasam. Rosho, when an evil man comes, they will say to him, "Why didn't you occupy yourself with Torah?" So he said, "What could I do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu made me very handsome, and all the women used to chase me. And I had all types of temptations because of this. So I didn't have the time, and wasn't settled where I could study, occupy myself to Torah." So who would they show? They'll show him Yosef, Yosef HaTzadik. "You might have been very handsome, but you weren't more handsome than Yosef." Omer olov al Yosef HaTzadik. It was said on Yosef HaTzadik, "Bechol yem v'yem, ha'yise eshes feitif ha'mishad losi bidvorim." When he was a servant to Potiphar in Egypt, every day the wife of Potiphar tried to entice him and to tempt him. Begodim shalof shalei shachris leishlof shalei arvis. The garments which she wore in the morning, she didn't wear in the evening. Begodim shalof shalei arvis leilof shalei shachris. And what she wore in the evening, she didn't wear in the morning. She was always changing her clothing in order to attract his attention. And she would tempt him and entice him, and she would threaten him. She said that if you won't listen to me, I'll have you thrown in the dungeon. And then she would try to tempt him with money. She said, "Here's elef kikrei kesev lishma alel. Here's 1,000 pieces of silver." And still, he will never listen to her. So this is what they'll answer to the Rosh, to the evil person. Nimtzo. So we find that Hillel mechayves anim. Hillel became the precedent which would destroy the alibis of the poor and create an obligation for them. Reb Lezer ben Chasam mechayves ha'ashirim, Reb Lezer ben Chasam for the wealthy, and Yosef mechayves ha'rashoyim, and Yosef for the evil. This is a well-known Gemara in Masechta Yoma. Now, we see from here that precedents mean a lot in the human psychology. Many times people feel that this I cannot do or this cannot be done. But if they have a role model, they have some type of precedent, then it can be done. You can do it. See, and this is what the Gemara is bringing out here. When it comes to Purim, there are a number of principles. When we study what went on during Purim, which is mechayev us, which becomes a precedent for us. Let us mention a few. Firstly, Esther. Esther was a very, very great individual, and she rose to the greatest heights possible in Kiddusha, in sanctity and holiness. And the Gemara brings in Masechta Megillah that there were seven women prophetesses. There were many more, but there were seven to which their prophecies were written explicitly, and one of those was Esther. The Gemara brings that one of the points, one of the places where she rose to the highest heights is in the Purim story. It states, Vatilbash Esther Bigdei Malchus. Esther put on her royal garments at the time she was going to go to Ahasuerus to plead for the sake of the nation of Israel. Lofshasa Ruach HaKodesh. Not only did she put on royal garments, but she also clothed herself in Ruach HaKodesh, in an aura of sanctity that HaKodesh Baruch Hu gave her. Now, what can we learn from this? Well, firstly, we learn how high a person can strive, how high a person can go. But we learn something else. Where did this take place? It is brought out that Esther lived in the palace of Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus, the Gemara says, regardless of how it might seem from the Megillus Esther, Ahasuerus was a very, very ruthless rosha, very evil person. He was prepared to give the whole nation, the Harigo, to be killed to Haman. He was a conqueror. He was a drunkard. He was a glutton. He had his harems. He was a murderer and everything. And Esther lived in his palace, was a captive to him, and forced to be his wife. And there could not be a greater place of tumah, a greater place of impurity than this place. It was in this place that Esther rose to the greatest heights. What do we learn from here? A person will say that I also could have been great, but I ended up in the wrong place. Had I been born there, had I grew up there, had I lived here, things would have been different. But because I happened to be born in this place, this is why I never really developed. I never really grew. And that we have the precedent of Esther. There was no one that could have been at a worse place, at a wrong time when it comes to personal growth. She was in the right place at the right time as far as HaKadosh Baruch Hu was concerned. But as far as personal growth, this would have been in the worst place at the worst time. And yet it was here that she grew to her greatest heights. And the Gemara brings out that actually there's a precedent for this precedent. And that was her ancestor Yosef. Esther actually had come from Binyamin. And Yosef and Binyamin were a pair. And Yosef had that attribute, like we brought out many times. People always say that if I would have been in this city, had I been in this yeshiva, had I been born to this family, had I grown up here, Yosef had everything against him. Yet his label became Yosef HaTzadik, Yosef the Righteous. He was uprooted from his family when he was 17 years old. He was sent to Egypt, which was the nation of the worst abominations in the world. He was a stranger there. He was a slave. he was tempted, like we just saw from the wife of Potiphar. He was thrown in the dungeon. You can imagine what the dungeons of Egypt must have been. This was Egypt. And there he was for 12 years. And then he rose to power, to an unequal power, where he became the viceroy to the powerful Pharaoh. And then he was tested with power and with enormous wealth. Moses says he became the wealthiest man in the world. This is where he grew up. This is where he developed. And this is where he brought up his children, Ephraim and Manasseh. And when Yaakov was reunited, Yaakov never thought that he would be able to endure this. And when he was reunited with him, he said, "This is my son Yosef, Omad Bitzitke, same righteousness that when he was with me." And even his children, Kerub and Mishim and Yuli, he says, they shall take their places amongst my children. So this was a precedent before. At any rate, this is one precedent that we can learn from the Megillas Esther, right? From Esther. Second one. The Chazal tell us that from all of the situations that Klal Yisrael found themselves in, there was never a more hopeless situation. We weren't in our own land. This was a nace that happened Chutz La'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael. When we're in our own land, at least we have a foundation. We were in Golus. We were in a Golus Besei Golus, a double exile. Exiled first by the Babylonians, and then again exiled by the Poros HaModai, the Persian Median Empire. It was called the Cheshech Besei Cheshech, a double darkness. We had two tyrants against us. Who were the most powerful people in the world? One was Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus, the Gemara says, was Molach al Misefe Lamatsefe. He ruled the entire world. The 127 Medinas, this was the entire world at that time. And then we had Haman. Haman was raised, elevated, al Kol Asorim, higher than any man in the land. So we had Haman, and Haman was the heir of Amalek, the grandson of Esau, the arch enemy. And we were all in their hands. The king gave his ring to Haman, which means he gave him full authority. The Gemara brings out further, it calls Haman Odom, Bekum Aleinu Odom. This is how Dovra Melech referred to Haman. The Maral says, what does it mean, Bekum Aleinu Odom? That if not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when a man stood up against us, we would have been swallowed up alive. He says, because there's a greater danger against a man than a king. Because a king is not interested in destroying people, because ein melech b'le'am, a king needs the people. What kind of king can he be if he has no nation? So he's interested in taking people, subjecting them to be his servants, to ally them, make an alliance with the people. But an Odom, who's a tyrant, an individual, he's not interested in people. That's why it states in the Mishnah Novice, Il mole meire malchus, if not for the fear of the kingdom of the government, Ish es chaveire chaybol. If you leave it up to individual people, one will swallow up the next entirely, because he wants the world for himself. A king doesn't want the world for himself, because if he has the world for himself, then he's no king. He's alone. He wants the mightiest nation in the world. So this was a further danger, that the authority and the power was given to Haman, and Haman was an orphan. And that's what David HaMelech wrote, that Lule Hashem, if not for Hashem, Bekum Aleinu Odom, when this Odom stood up against us and he was ready to swallow us up. The decree was already written and sealed with the royal ring, and already was sent out to the entire world. And something which is written, v'nechtam b'tabas ha-melech ein lo'oshiv, something which is written and sealed by the king cannot be returned, cannot be reversed. Now, this means it was a totally hopeless situation. The minutes were ticking away for the decree to be fulfilled. The Gemara refers to Esther. It says Esther's Deme to the Shachar. There was a certain star which was called the Shachar, and it would appear right before dawn. The dawn is referred to as the Shachar. And it says Esther is similar to that Shachar. More asks why. Because the day has daylight. The night also has light. It has moonlight and starlight. But right before the dawn, there is no light. The sun has not risen yet, and the moon and the stars have already set. And this was Esther. This was the story of Esther. Total darkness. So there was never a more hopeless situation for Klal Yisrael. And also, as we mentioned many times, that this was the only time a decree of total annihilation was written against the whole nation of Israel. Still, V'napechu, Kodesh Baruch Hu came and he reversed and turned the whole thing over on its head. Those that were on top ended up on the bottom, and those that were on the bottom ended up on top. This is the story of the Megillah. So what do we learn from here? We learn from here that we must never say the situation is hopeless. Just like we must never say that we're too poor to learn, because then we're shown Hillel, and nobody could have been more poorer than Hillel, and still he studied. We can never say that the situation is hopeless, is too hopeless, because then we are shown the story of Esther, of Purim, where nothing could have been more hopeless, and it was in the Ha'aprichu. And another point in this, you see, Purim was not just a Hatzolo, it was not just a salvation. Purim was known, as it's written, V'nahapechu, or Hachedesh Asher Nehapach. Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't have to do what he did. He could have just annulled the decree. But he did more. He reversed the entire situation. Instead of Haman wanting to hang Mordechai, Mordechai hung Haman. Instead of Haman having the ring of the king, the ring was given to Mordechai. Instead of Haman living in a palace of the king, that palace was given to Mordechai. Instead of Haman being the viceroy, the Mishnah Lamelech, Achashverosh, this was given to Mordechai. It was reversed, the whole situation, where not only the threat was taken off from those who were on the bottom, but those that were on the bottom went and took the places of those that were on the top, and those that were on the top went and took the places of those that were on the bottom. And this was in a situation that was totally hopeless. So therefore, another precedent we learn from the story of the Megillah, that we must never say the situation is hopeless, because nothing could have been more hopeless in this situation. This is why it was called the Shachar. There was no light whatsoever, and still we see the great miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fulfilled. Further precedent is what did Yisrael do? What action did they take in order to deter, or in order to stave off Haman's decree? The only action that was taken was the power of tefillah, of prayer. Esther didn't ask for Mordechai anything further than go and gather lechneis kol ha'yudim, or gather all of Yisrael. Bishushan Abiro wasn't able to do it in the whole empire, so in Shushan, in the city of Shushan. B'tzumalai called a public fast day. Now this is what is known as Tfilah Utsa'oko, where you will be mishpalel and you'll cry out to Hashem. The purpose of the Tainus was for the Tfilah. This is all of the action which was taken to revert, to annul this decree. And from here we see the power of tefillah. This also we see in our first confrontation with Amalek. Parshas Bishalach states immediately after we came out of Egypt, Vayove Amalek. Amalek came to fight with Israel. So Moshe sent Yeshua to go fight. This is at the end of Parshas Amalek. Moshe sat on a rock and he put his hands up to heaven. And when Moshe would keep his hands up, then Yisrael would win. When he would leave his hands fall down, then Amalek would win. The Gemara brings and the Medrash brings, was the victory dependent really on the hands of Moshe? What does that have to do with the victory? So it says, because when Moshe would lift up his hands, so then the people would look at his hands and they would look towards heaven. And then they would be mispalel, they would pray to Hashem. And they would win. And when he would bring down his hands, so they would look down. They wouldn't look to Hashem. And they would stop being mispalel, and then Amalek would win. The keach of tefillah, the power of tefillah in particular, the Maral says, is the most powerful tool against Amalek, because Amalek was the grandson of Esav, and by Esav it says Al Charba Chotichya, he lives by the sword, but Yaakov said Hakol Kol Yaakov, Yitzchok said Hakol Kol Yaakov. Yaakov's power is in the voice of Torah and in the voice of Tefillah. So the Gemara Darshans, Kishakol kol Yaakov, Ein Yodayim Shel Esav Gever al Yisrael. When there is the voice of Yaakov, then the hands of Esav, who live by the sword, have no power. Kishain Akol kol Yaakov, when the voice of Yaakov does not come out, then the hands of Esav, heaven forbid, prevail. So therefore, in particular, there is the call of Yaakov is very forceful and powerful and potent against the hands of Esav. This is what the Gemara brings in Masechta Megillah. The Gemara, in the beginning, are trying different, different sages are giving different insights as to the some of the prime features of the Megillah. So one brings Rav Mosna, Omar. He brings from the Pasuk in Devarim, Mi goy godl asher le'elakim krevim elov kashem elakenu b'chol koreinu elov. Who is a great nation like Israel that is so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that whenever they want, they call to him and he listens? This is a posuk in Devarim Dalet, posuk Zayin. It states, take a look at it inside. This is in Parshas Veschanan. Ki mi goy godol, Meshu is saying this to the people. Mi goy godol, is there another nation, asher lo elokim krevim elov, which Hashem is so close to them, kashem elokeinu, like our God, b'chol koreinu elov, that whenever we want, we call to him, and he listens. So the Gemara brings, what in particular is an illustration of this? Purim. Purim in particular is an illustration. Here we had the most hopeless situation. Esther told Mordechai, go and gather up all of the people in Shushan and let them call out to Hashem. They called out to Hashem for 3 days and the whole situation is totally reversed. So he says, this Pasuk has a particular significance and illustration in Purim. So therefore we have now another precedent that we learn, that we must never say that tefillah will not help, because tefillah, if it could help by Purim, it could help all over. There is nothing too great, nothing too difficult that tefillah cannot break through. So that's another precedent that we can learn from Purim. To go on to another point, the Gemara brings a pasuk from Kehelis, Shlema Melech, and it says here also, Purim is a great illustration. In Kehelis Beis, Pasuk Chof Vav, Shlema HaMelech, King Solomon, wrote as follows, Ki lo odom shetev lefonov, to a person who is good before Hashem, nosan chochma v'das v'simcha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him wisdom, understanding, and simcha. V'lachayte, to the person who is evil to before Hashem, nosan inyon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him the opportunity, le'asreif, v'lichnais, to gather material wealth. Lo'aseis le'tev lifnei alakim. And eventually, all of that wealth that he's going to gather, he is going to have to give that over to the one who's good before Hashem. Rashi explains, he says, to the person who is good before Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him chokhmah, v'das, lev lasik b'teiru b'mitzvahs. He gives him a power to study Torah, to gather the knowledge of Torah, to do mitzvahs. And then he gives him simcha. What does it mean, simcha? When can a person be b'simcha? Lishmeach b'chelkei. He gives him the quality where he is satisfied with his lot. Because no matter what a person has, if he's not satisfied with his lot, he's not going to be happy. He can have $1, he can have $1 billion. If he's not satisfied with it, he's not going to be happy. So he gives him chokhma v'das b'simcha, not only the wisdom, but also the power to be satisfied with his lot. B'maychel b'mishnik k'sus nekiyah, that whatever he has, the food he has, the drink he has, the clothing he has, he's happy with it. This is what he gives to the one who's good before him. Now, to the one who's evil before him, to the chayter, what does he give? He gives him the opportunity. So Rashi explains like this. He gives him a dissatisfaction. So this person will always be seeking more. And he will go and gather and collect a great deal of material wealth. Then, in order that this wealth can be turned over eventually to the tzaddik, to the one who's good before Hashem. And then Rashi quotes the Gemara. The Gemara in Megillah says that when we'll, he says, this posuk is an illustration of Purim. Haman went and he gathered up tremendous wealth, and he gathered up a tremendous palace, and he worked very hard on climbing up the ladder, the political ladder and the success ladder, and he became the viceroy, and he was the one who persuaded the king to give him the ring. Could have been that had not Haman persuaded the king to give his ring away, he would have never given it to anyone. And he was the one who persuaded the king to give him a palace. And all of this was in order that he could give it over to Mordechai. So this is what Shlomo HaMelech said, Ki la odem shetev lefonov, to the person that is good before Hashem. He gives him wisdom and knowledge, and he gives him simcha. Chayter, but to the chayter, then he gives him the power to gather, and to collect, and to amass, in order that it can be handed over, transferred to the tzaddik. Now the Maharal explains as follows. He says that wisdom is an acquisition and material wealth is an acquisition, but in many ways they're contrary to each other. When it comes to wisdom, the person who seeks wisdom, and especially wisdom of Torah, he cannot go and seek material wealth at the same time. So he has to have a great desire for this wisdom, and at the same time he has to have the quality to be satisfied with whatever he has, with whatever material possession he has in the world. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that someone really wants wisdom and he wants Torah and he wants mitzvahs, so he reinforces that. He gives him the power to pursue it, and at the same time he gives him a power of istapkus, to be satisfied with whatever material possessions he has. So this is what it means, ulatev lefonov, nosan chokhma v'das v'simcha. On the other hand, to go and amass material wealth, which is another acquisition, you need a nature where you're never satisfied, where you constantly want more material wealth. Because if you're satisfied, so then you're just going to sit back and finished. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees an evil person, and here he's called a chayter, chayt actually means someone who's lacking. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees this evil person, he says, all right, this is the man I need here. I need someone that can go make a lot of money in the world. So he instills in him, or he has this constant drive to gain more. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him success. So he'll gain an enormous amount. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take what he has created and give it over to the tzaddik. So this way he's utilizing them. So the Gemara says, this is Mordechai and Haman. The Haman made tremendous gains, like we mentioned. But these gains ended up for the sake of Mordechai. Mordechai himself would have never made such gains. So this is what Shlomo HaMelech is writing. This is in order that we should learn, the Maral says, the Darkei Hashem, the way of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These are some of the points that we can learn from the Masechta Megillah, from the Megillah Esther, and from the Gemara, and also, as mentioned, some of the precedents that we can learn that can be a model, a role model for us in our lives. Thank you.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.